You are listening to the Marty Leeds Mathematical Radio Hour, where we discuss myth, math, spirituality, philosophy, and much, much more. www.thesyncbook.com. Greetings and salutations and much love, good listeners. Welcome once again to the show. So good that you could join me as always. Just a few notes before we get started here. I recently uploaded a new video to YouTube, and that's on my site, MartyLeeds33, on YouTube there. And it's dealing with the symbolic, mathematical, and spiritual connotations of the monogram of Christ. And it's called, the video is just called The Monogram of Christ. I cover extensively the monogram known by the letters ICXC and go into briefly the letters IHS. Really enjoyed making the video, really proud of this one, and think it's very informative. So if you get a chance, check it out, share it with your, you know, on your Facebook and Twitter and all of that. I just booked some new guests for the show as well, including Walter Cruttenden, author of Lost Star of Myth and Time. Love the book, love his theories. And he's also the organizer of the CPAC conference, which is the Conference on Precession and Ancient Knowledge, which is going on right now as I speak. So, and we are going to be talking about the precession of the equinoxes, the sun and its binary counterpart, as well as the role that vast cycles played in ancient times. Randall Carlson is also going to be stopping by the show as well, and he is the head of Sacred Geometry International, and he's going to be stopping by for at least a two-hour conversation, possibly three. He's just a wealth of information, and so I want to pick his brain give some time to do that. And we're going to be speaking about arithmomancy, sacred geometry, of course, number symbolism, philosophy, and a whole other host of goodies. So look forward to that. And it also looks like I'll be speaking with Dr. Rick Strassman, who is the author of DMT. His latest book is called DMT, The Soul of Prophecy. And he's got several other books as well looking into the phenomenon of DMT. So really looking forward to the next couple months. So stay tuned for all of that. For those of you that are listening, if you know of any guests you might want on the program, that is including independent musical artists, singer-songwriters, please shoot me a message at martyleeds33@gmail.com. I'm always interested in checking out new bands, new singer-songwriters, or exploring a researcher or author that I'm not aware of. So if you have any ideas, feel free to email me. Once again, that's martyleeds33@gmail.com. And once again, don't forget to check out the River of Stars Astrology Conference this next March on the Big Island of Hawaii. I will be speaking with several other authors and lecturers and researchers, and it is sure to be a great time. And I mean, hell, you can't beat Hawaii, right? And you can purchase early bird tickets at a reduced rate right now. And you can get all of that info at www.theriveroftheriverofstars.com. All right, let us get on with the show, shall we? Our guests tonight are author, lecturer, and counselor Lennon Honor, and our musical guest is the hip-hop group The Space Between. This show is brought to you by The Syncbook Radio. Check out all the wonderful podcasts. 42 minutes, always record and synchronize. More information about Syncbook Press, Syncbook Radio, and Syncbook events can be found at www.thesyncbook.com. If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends and please support it by becoming a donor. You'll find the donation links under each episode on the website, and please consider setting up a monthly charge as it helps us keep the lights on and helps keep our microphones humming. And as always, thank you for your support. Our guest tonight is Lennon Honor. Lennon Honor is a writer, musician, video producer, talk show host, and counselor. He has provided a wealth of information and inspiration in regards to manhood, fatherhood, marriage, children, family, and personal growth. Lennon has produced two books, has a lecture series delving into deep issues related to male-female relationships, attraction, self-esteem, self-worth, and personal growth, and also offers personal consultations in the areas of marriage, male-female relationships, family, and spiritual growth. Lennon has produced 8 major documentaries to date, and his websites are LennonHonor.com and LennonHonorFilms.com. So without further ado, let's get pious with Lennon Honor. Lennon, it's a pleasure to be speaking with you today. How are things going?
Oh, everything's going well, Marty. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I look forward to speaking with you.
Yeah, how's things in the world of the Honor family? You've got, how many kids you got? You got 5 kids, is that what it is?
five children, so we're always busy here in the household, but we love it. We enjoy the experience.
That's a litter, man.
it's a basketball team.
It's a basket. It's almost right. Yeah,
starting five at least.
So I got to meet you very briefly at the Free Your Mind conference. We actually sat at the same table together when we were talking with attendees and selling products and things like that. And you caught my attention right away because, you know, all the people that were coming over to the table were like, oh, hey, you're that math guy. But everybody that came to you was like, Lennon Honor, you're the man. So I was like, immediately, I was like, I think I want to talk to this guy. So then I got a chance to watch your Free Your Mind speech. And then I checked out a bunch of your videos and I really dig your perspective on so many things. So how did you get started on this path as far as being a counselor and a lecturer and an author and all of that?
Yeah, well, I would say that the counseling just comes out of the personal experience. I studied psychology a bit in college, but after I got out of college, I really started to dissect psychology, aspects of psychology, and really, I would say, basic aspects of psychology. And that helps me in terms of the counseling, but also just from personal experiences and types of things that I've gone through, in particular when I was a child, overcoming those types of challenges. But then also later on in life, being able to establish a positive relationship and a healthy family institution and everything that goes into that. And then also just building myself up as a man and doing the personal work to be a decent human being and a good husband, a good father. So what I tend to do is counsel people on their progressions in life if they wish to achieve, just a higher order of a life existence. So that's where the counseling aspect of my work comes out of. And then, of course, there's the writing, the books. I do a lot in media manipulation, mind control. I've done documentaries on the topic as well. And really, the reason why I got started with that was because when my children were a lot younger, my oldest son, he's 10 now, I think when he was about 2, that's when I really started to ask critical questions about a lot of the media programming that's out there. And one of the things that I did was I began to analyze particular movies that were popular for children. And as I analyzed those movies, I found that a lot of the programming that was present there, the subliminal programming, if you will, was quite destructive, and that children should not be exposed to those types of things. So as a father, I wanted to keep my children's consciousness safe from that type of thing. And that is where that aspect of my work really developed out of, really coming from a place of a caring, loving father that wanted to keep his children's consciousness safe. And out of that, I've launched many documentaries dealing with that topic. And that's pretty much how I got started on this path.
So how long has this been? I mean, when did you start your website and everything like that?
Initially, LennonHonor.com, I had that up, I would say, that's been over maybe about a decade, a little bit over a decade, and it's gone through progressions. I remember I even had it down for a while, and then I set up LennonHonorFilms.com. That's where my documentary work was established at, and that's where I was dealing more with media manipulation, mind control, symbolism, subliminal messages, the entertainment industry, the occultic aspects of the entertainment industry. That was, I would say, about maybe 7 years ago. So in all, I set up a YouTube page too around that time as well. So I would say in all, it's been about a decade, and it all coincided again with the birth of my first child, second child, and then I really started to ask critical questions, and I wanted to help other people, and in particular parents, to keep their children safe from the levels of programming that's out there.
So having your children kind of lit the fire under your butt, if you will, to really expose these things and get them out to people, huh?
Yes, and I think that coming from that vantage point, or at least from that that orientation, it provided me with a very unique perspective. Because what I found is that oftentimes individuals who engage in, like the media analysis, or looking at mind control, or they're looking at, we can even look at issues like September 11, that many of the people who are out there who are presenting information, really good information, they're not necessarily coming from the vantage point of a parent. And one of the reasons why is because oftentimes parents, we get so bogged down with the world that we spend so much time just trying to make ends meet. So we don't really have time to research. We don't have time to study, let alone put together a presentation, put together a lecture, put together a documentary, write a book. But from my vantage point, I think that I provide a unique perspective because I know we have 5 children, but I am one of those types of people that I know that it's important to get this message out and come from a vantage point of a man who's committed to a wife 13 years, a man who's committed to 5 children, a father who's committed to his 5 children, a loving father, and then I can present that unique perspective to the world as well. So it's beautiful that the reason why I really got into this work was because of my children, and therefore the orientation really stems from a father's desire to love and protect his children. That's a very unique perspective, I would say.
And meanwhile, somebody in the background just skidded out on their bike and probably didn't have good fathering. It was not taught good. Is that what I heard in the background? Was somebody?
Sure did. It was a motorcycle.
Yeah. there's so many things that you discuss in like your books and your lectures and your videos. And I mean, you and I could probably talk for 4 or 5 hours on just any one of these topics. But for this conversation, I wanted to hone in on one specific topic, and that's centered around manhood, parenthood, and responsible fathering. Just you know, as you just said, you know, I don't think this message gets out a lot enough because so many people are bogged down or taxed with their everyday life. So, but before we get into this, can we talk a little bit? Can we set the stage here and talk a little bit about your childhood and your upbringing, and so the audience can get a sense of where you came from and where you are now?
Yes. And what I do, and what my wife and I, what we do for our children, in a lot of ways, it's the antithesis of what was done for us. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's another one of our strengths in our message is that we want people to understand that it's not so much about what you went through, because you can overcome it. It's about what you are going to be creating moving into the future, and that anyone, if you put in the work, if you put in the time to heal, if you make the commitment to doing something greater than what was done for you, then you can do something greater for your own children. And that's precisely what we've done here inside our household. I grew up in a household where with a father who was extremely abusive. He was abusive to my mother physically. He was abusive verbally, emotionally, very controlling. He was also an alcoholic and a drug addict. And at a certain point, his drug addiction, he was doing all kinds of things, heroin, all types of things. But he smoked a lot of marijuana. And that's the thing is that he smoked so much of it. He grew it on the side of the house, and he was high most of the time. And not just on marijuana, but high on other drugs, too, and then the alcohol. And it's just a very, in terms of fathering, being a fully present, intellectually grounded father, when you're high, it's very difficult to do those things because your intellectual capacities are compromised in those moments. So if you can imagine, if you're living in a household with someone who is spending most of his time high, therefore, as a representation of manhood, it becomes a very devolved representation for manhood. And my father was unable to function as a loving, caring, guiding father. So in addition to him, and then at a certain point, he got into crack. And once he got into crack, that's when really things in the household got really, really bad. He threatened all of us, but I remember at one specific instance, he threatened my life, and I was 13 years old. And I saw so much growing up, the abuse. Not only was he abusive to my mother, he was also abusive to all of my siblings and I. Just a very destructive human being. And so for me, it was difficult. I had a very difficult childhood, a lot of trauma, a lot of pain. I began to doubt myself as a human being. I believed that I would die, I would be dead by the age of 17. These are the types of things that I was grappling with in my early childhood. So coming out of that, I recognized, and even early on in my childhood, I remember I had a conversation with myself, and I may have been 9 or 10 years old, and I said, when I have a wife, I'm going to make sure that she does not experience what my mother experiences. Mm-hmm. And from that moment on, I made a commitment that I would do everything that I could do to be a better man than my father was, and to be a better father than my father was. So if you can imagine a young child having that type of orientation and perspective on his life, I really set myself on course to really working on myself, healing myself, refining myself, taking the best aspects of what it means to be a man, or at least what people perceives manhood to be about, and embracing those things. And then looking at those aspects that people may tend to embrace that are dysfunctional, and letting go of those things, steering clear of those things. And so from my childhood, I recognized that it was not so much about what my father did to us, or in some cases, what he did not do for us. It was about what was I going to do to become greater than that, and what was I going to do so that my wife would experience a loving relationship with me, and ultimately, what did I need to do so that when I have children, my children would be raised in a loving environment, a caring environment, where their father is fully attentive to them, where their father is affectionate, where their father is present, where their father is not brutalizing them or keeping them in a state of fear. Their father is actually there to protect them. And that's been pretty much my journey. And this is the message that I try to bring to men and women, that irrespective of what you've been through in life, because we all have trauma, we all have childhood trauma. Mm-hmm. Irrespective of that, you can become something great. You just have to make the commitment and be persistent, and over time, work on yourself, and then you will be blessed. And the beautiful thing is that your wife or your husband will be blessed, and the most beautiful thing, of course, your children will be blessed accordingly.
Do you feel that your father you know, got into the abusive marijuana, abusive relationships with his wife, you know, with smoking crack, things like that, because he didn't have that himself. He didn't have that love. He was abandoned by his father.
Yeah, well, he the interesting story, the thing about my father, a very interesting story. He had a traumatizing childhood too. Mm-hmm. He was abused. And this is the thing for a lot of people. It's just cross generational. A lot of things are just simply passed down from one generation to the next. A lot of things that we do as a species that are totally irrational. We do because someone before us did it that we know, and usually it's our parents, in some cases it's our grandparents, but a lot of times things are just passed down through the family line. My father was extremely abused. He was not loved as a child. He was raised by someone who he thought was his father, but he found out much later on in his childhood that it wasn't his father, and that devastated him. So as you can imagine, and then the person who raised him, he has his name, Lennon Honor. Okay, so there's Lennon Honor Sr., and then my father, Lennon Honor Jr. I'm Lennon Honor the third. I have a son, Lennon Honor the fourth. So you can imagine you're named after someone and you've been told that this is your biological father and you're raised by him, and he may even be quite abusive to a degree, but at least you still consider him to be your father. But then at a certain point you find out that he's not your father. And so for my own father, that devastated him. Also, his mother didn't treat him well. My grandmother didn't treat him well. He was abused. So, yes, one of the dynamics is, someone had posted this on my Facebook page, and I will never forget it, and that is that hurt people will hurt people.
Yeah.
And that's precisely what my father, and it doesn't make my father a bad human being. It just meant that he had some healing that needed to take place, and he never received that healing. To this day, he still has issues. The thing about my father, and I haven't spoken with him for about 2 years now. I think the last time I spoke with him was November 18th on my birthday 2 years ago. We're coming up here on my 2 years later, shortly here in about another month. But in the past, whenever we would talk, whenever my father would bring up his children, and he would always say things like, you know, I'm so sorry, and I wish I could have did things differently, and he would start to cry. But the thing was that he wasn't necessarily crying for the pain that he inflicted upon us. He was crying for the pain that was inflicted upon him, and the pain that he inflicted on us, and even him talking about it, reminded him of the pain that was inflicted on him. And he has never had the time, or really he has never engaged in the healing process. So the drugs numbs that pain. The alcohol numbs that pain. The abuse of marijuana numbs that pain. The getting on crack, that was the ultimate for him. Because at that point, I'm telling you, the types of things that I was going through in my household because of my father once he got on crack, extremely abusive. But the thing was that he hurt people. And in the absence of personal healing, hurt people will hurt people. And that's precisely what took place with my father.
Yeah, there seems to be the tradition gets passed down. It's this thing that's like, well, you know, and there's almost like a prideful ignorant to clinging to these harmful traditions. Meaning like, you know, well, my dad used to beat the hell out of me, and I worked out for us. I'm all right, so I'm just going to do that to my children as well. You know, how do we break that cycle? How did you break that cycle?
Well, that's the thing. When you realize what love is, you realize that love does not hurt. See, that's the thing. And a lot of people think that love hurts, and there's songs that are written about this. And so therefore, if a parent decides to abuse the child physically, they can call it spanking, okay, they will say, I'm doing it because I love you. No, that's not why you're doing it, because hurting someone physically or inflicting physical pain upon someone and abusing them in that way so that they will capitulate to what you say or what you tell them to do, that's not an act of love. That's an act of, it's an act of violence in essence. And in this sense, if there is a family history of that type of abuse, at a certain point it becomes normalized. An aspect of human psychology, there's a lot of things that we do just simply becomes normalized. Even in societies, there are things socially that we do that it becomes normalized. As an example, circumcision, it has become normalized, but it is a form of abuse. It is genital mutilation. It is the betrayal of an infant's physical existence, in essence, and ultimately what people are saying is that we are going to cut a piece of your penis off. And this is a tradition that is passed down from one generation to the next. And so a parent may say, well, yeah, it happened to me and it was done to me. I was abused in this way, or I was generally mutilated. People try to use the word circumcised, but really it's genital mutilation. Mm-hmm. And I got through it, and I'm fine. No, you're not fine. And just because you got through it doesn't mean that it was right. So for me in my life, so for instance, I was circumcised in my life. My wife and I, we were recognized. We were not going, just because it's a tradition and just because it's socially acceptable and just because it's been passed down from in the family line doesn't mean that we're going to expose our children to the same type of abuse, genital mutilation. Well, the same thing applies to many of the things that happens inside families. That oftentimes things are passed down. I was whipped. I was spanked with the belt, or I was beaten. So and I turned out okay. And so I'm going to do that to my children. No, it's not about what your parents did to you. It's about what are you going to do for your own children that will be better than what your parents did to you. And so for me, part of and what my wife, we have a whole series of this for premium members on the website. We have a series that where we talk candidly about our childhood experiences, the traumas that we experienced, much of which was normalized, and how we overcame those things. And we titled that series Breaking the Cycles of Abuse. And I want people to understand that ultimately you have to make a choice. This is how you break these particular programs. You look at it as a cycle of abuse, and then you look at what needs to be done, what level of healing you have to take, what needs to take place in you in the first place, but then also what do you need to do moving forward so that your children are not exposed to the same type of experience. And my wife, we have been so very careful with our children, how we speak to them, you know, and even how we discipline them, the total antithesis of what I experienced. Just real quickly, I remember being spanked not just with a hand, but with a belt, a leather belt. Mm-hmm. And this was very common. And we used to get spanked, slapped across the face, beat on, all of us, mainly by my father. And, you know, with my children, I've never raised a hand. I've never hit them. Because ultimately to hit them is to betray my responsibility as being a protector of them. You don't protect people by inflicting pain upon them or abusing them physically. So my children, they're having a very different life experience, and it's centered in this notion that love, that ultimately you can teach more profound lessons through love and proper guidance than can be done through physical pain and trauma. This is what I mean by breaking a cycle of abuse, and it can be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, my parents said one of the major regrets in raising us was that, or at least, you know, I remember my mom saying this very clearly, that she wishes she would have never spanked us. That's what her parents did. That's what they learned. They were young when they had us, and that's what happened, you know. And making a child fearful of their creators is a deep, you know, physical torment. It's a psychological torment that lasts for a long time. Like as you were saying, even if you're not really aware of it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very important point you bring up there, and that is that parents, our primary responsibility is to love and to keep our children safe. And you even look at in the animal kingdom, there's many animals who understand that basic principle, and they will do whatever they have to do to protect their babies. However, with human beings, it's quite fascinating that just because something is done to us by our parents, we tend to adopt. In other words, we tend to do what was done to us. And especially if we have children younger, where we haven't begun to ask questions about our own childhood or begin the healing process from our own childhood traumas, we tend to do what was done to us. If you take some time, you know, and you get a little bit older, and then before you have children, you take the time to reflect back on your childhood, and then you can intellectualize the experience and say, wait a minute, okay, I was beaten, you know, I had this particular experience, I had this experience. Now, what about my children? When we have children, do I want them to have that experience? Okay, what do I need to do to change? What do I need to change in me to ensure that my children do not have that experience? Oftentimes what happens is that when people begin to have children, they haven't processed their own childhood and looked at the good and the bad and recognized what they were going to take from the good and move forward, what they were going to leave behind of the bad and move forward. And so therefore they tend to do what was done to them. The thing is, I have to say this, is that we, as parents, we make all types of mistakes. My wife and I, we've made a lot of mistakes too, because basically we're starting over. We're doing something totally different than was done to us. And one of the major challenges for parents is getting to a point where they can admit their mistakes, especially as it relates to their children. So oftentimes what I find is that parents tend to have this psychological issue of admitting, and they will rewrite the script in their mind. And they may say in their mind, I did a great job with my child. But the truth of the matter is they didn't do a very good job. They weren't very responsible and they were abusive. But in their mind, they rewrite the script, because it is a very difficult thing to begin to grapple, psychologically speaking, to begin to grapple with the truth that you were not the best parent that you could be. And that is a very difficult issue to deal with. And that's precisely why my wife and I were very clear, especially when we talk about child rearing and parenting, people have to take it very seriously.
Admitting that you've done wrong is quintessential to growth, and that goes for parents as well. I mean, if you get this stubborn, you know, father, whatever's like, oh, I know what I'm doing, that sort of thing, it's like, well, that just shows that you're not growing at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And you'll find that people who tend to say that, and they say it in a boastful way, they really don't know what they are doing. And we always have this saying, my wife and I, that the proof is always in the pudding. If your child has suffered, then you didn't do a good job. You didn't do the best job that you could have done. And again, my wife and I, we're not perfect, but we did recognize, especially before, even before we had children, that we were going to do something different, and that what was done to us, many of the things that were done to us, they were wrong. And so therefore, we had to recognize that we had to do something different. And anyone can, even if you're a parent right now and you are doing things to your children or not doing things for your children, maybe not spending time with them, maybe you're not having open lines of communication, you can change that in a day and start a new cycle and stop the cycle of abuse and start a new cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. How do you define manhood?
Manhood is a process of continual growth towards becoming your greatest self. That's what manhood is about.
Yeah.
It's not about like becoming one thing and then all of a sudden you're the gift to the planet, which a lot of men have this kind of egocentric perspective on what manhood means. No, manhood is about every single day working on yourself and becoming something greater, and not just for yourself, but so that you can be in service to something that is greater than you. Now, here is the issue that a lot of men, they believe that they're the greatest thing on the planet. Is we really struggle with this issue of ego. You know, we just have this egotistical kind of perspective on things, and we tend to be arrogant. You know, it's just part of, you know, growing up in a sexist society. Men think that they are the gift to the cosmos.
We aren't? Oh, no.
Not all of us, but many of us, because of the programming. And it's just programming. And sometimes it's passed down from one generation to the next. In some cases, it's just media programming. And we tend to have this orientation and this perspective about ourselves, that we are the gift to the cosmos. And so therefore, the notion that we can become greater becomes a mute point, because we already believe that we are as great as we can be. Now, what I tend to teach, and what I'm teaching my sons, is that every single day, you must work on yourself and become something greater, and not just for you so that you can stick your chest out as a man. No, but so that you can have something to offer to the world, and so that you can have something to offer to something that is greater than you. And in my mind, what is greater than me as a man is a family institution. What is greater than me as a man is being a father. You see, and therefore, as a man, I should be, at least in my personal experience, I was always working towards this goal of becoming a greater father. Not all men are interested in becoming fathers. Okay, but you can still become the greatest man that you can be. You can still become the greatest father that you, or a husband that you can be. And so in this sense, manhood is about this purification process. It's about this process of committing yourself to your own refinement day by day and becoming greater, not so that you can stick your chest out and be boastful, but so that you can be in a position to where you can have something of value and consequence to offer to the world.
You know, I'm so glad you're saying this, because I've been thinking a lot lately about, you know, as you were saying, that we're surrounded by, you know, basically a society where there's like, you know, ego-filled people, you know, people that the arrogance is really what stands out. And I've been thinking lately, you know, I mean, I'm 35 years old, and I've been thinking about this process of becoming a man, recognizing my own manhood, and only recognizing it within maybe the last 5 to 7 years or something like that, which is pretty damn late in the game if you think about it. But, you know, and that is the recognition of being responsible, striving to be the better person, as you're saying, forgiving myself and others, and that, you know, forgiving myself, forgiving others that have caused me harm, that sort of thing. And I was thinking about the fact that how many men are out there that will probably go through their whole life and not come to that realization, yet think they are men.
Yeah. And that's the great challenge. And see, I believe that if our fathers were the best that they could be, that it would be we would have a natural inclination to become the best that we can be. In other words, if our fathers presented us with, you know, a viable example day by day, then we would be more inclined to become something greater day by day. But the problem is that in the absence of that level of instruction, in the absence of that archetype, we may think that we are the greatest that we can be at that moment, and then we decide not to continue to grow. And this happens for a lot of men.
Yeah, as you're speaking, it just reminded me of something I just read in your book today that I just really hit me. It says, this comes from Things That I Must Say to You. This comes from the book Writings for the Fathers of the World of Tomorrow and for the Women Who Love Them. This comes from the chapter Things That I Must Say to You. It says, I often wonder how different the world would be if each father was careful enough to pass to his son the best of his wisdom. What if I was given the best of my father's wisdom? What if my father was given the best of his father's wisdom? What if this gift was passed down to us for 40 generations before I had received it? What then would I be able to offer to you? just a very just a great sentiment there that you're saying, that it's like, you know, hey, if each father would give the best and the best and the best, next thing you know, we would have this golden pyramid, if you would, of wisdom and morality and authenticity and integrity and passion and heart and things like that. And we don't seem to have that in our society. And you, and a lot of time the things you talk about is the media manipulation. How much of this did you know, when you were, you know, raising your children, did you see all over and made you retract from that? Because you homeschool your children, right?
Yeah, we homeschool. We also were vegan. We also home birth. So the last three babies. Here we go. Here goes the motorcycle person.
That's funny.
We're vegan. We also home birthed our children. So the last three children we gave birth here at home, and I delivered with my own hands. That's a whole nother topic too, just in terms of empowerment as a man. But getting to your point, or getting to your question, and what was your question? What was it about the media manipulation part, right?
Well, yeah, basically, it's like when you started raising your children, right? And you were saying that, you know, when your children was two, your first child or whatever was two, and you started looking around and you see all of this stuff, that it's like, it's really gearing. It's, you know, whether that's the TV, whether that's the music, whether that's, you know, whatever it is, the video games, the movie, whatever it is almost like gearing these children to become not men, to become ego-filled, materialist, ignorant, arrogant, that sort of thing. Yeah. And so, I mean, I guess it's like, when did you start retracting from that? And how prevalent do you see it? I mean, it seems like it's everywhere to me. It seems like it's 360 degrees from your standpoint, if you will.
Yeah, it is everywhere. It's everywhere. And you can go on the television. You can go watch a movie. You can play a video game. You can look at the newspaper. You can watch a music video. You can listen to particular lyrics or particular songs. And you'll see it all. It's a poor example and representation of what it means to be a man.
All of these things seem to be, you know, playing to the lowest common denominator of humanity, right?
Yes, I would say so. Especially as it, and see, and here's the thing: not just in regards to men, but also in terms of how men are to be expected to relate, or how men are expected to relate to women, and that's a huge problem too.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say for me that me really recognizing the importance of really unplugging from that matrix, if you will. And it's really a matrix of male domination, male dysfunction. It's a matrix of a low standard for what it means to be a man, a low standard in terms of what we can, our intellectual aptitude as men. In many cases, what happens is that we are exposed to programming that limits our intellectual progressions, but then encourages our physical domination of the world. And that may be expressed sexually, that may be socially, that may be economically, whatever the case may be. But it is to this point of intellectual retardation, in essence, that a male will find himself in a state of arrested development. In other words, that there are males currently today who may be 30, 35, 40, but who are operating, intellectually speaking, on a level of someone who, let's say, is 20, 25. And when I say intellectually, I'm not simply saying in terms of their knowledge base about things. I'm talking about how they relate to the world, how they relate to women, how they see women, how they see themselves, that this state of arrested development speaks more to the paradigm of boyhood as opposed to the paradigm of manhood. And so for me, it was important that I eliminated as much of that type of programming out of my own life, but then also out of my son's life, because the idea is that I want them to have a clear path to manhood, and I don't want them to be stuck in a state of arrested development like I was. And see, I had my first son when I was 28, but I wouldn't say that I came into a level of respectable manhood until maybe I was 30, 31, maybe 32 years old. Mm-hmm. And that's fairly late in the game. And this speaks to a point that you brought up earlier. What if I was able to figure out a way, and all of us as men, we were able to figure out a way that with each generation, our sons were able to come into manhood, let's say 5 years sooner than we did. What kind of impact would that have on the world? So you figure that after four generations, you got a boy's coming into manhood 20 years sooner. So in that sense, if I came into manhood, let's say at the age of 32, then it would be possible, therefore, that four generations down the line, that my great-great-great-grandson would come into the manhood at the age of 12, potentially?
Okay, this is something that's so important that you're bringing up here, because this is something I've thought about for a while, and it's stuck with me, because when you look at Mother Nature, You know, you become an adult, at least physically, when you're 13, 14, 15 years old. I mean, you are able to produce children at that point. And that's when God or Mother Nature or, you know, the universe or whatever tells you you are ready. And it seems to many people it would be insane to say that, oh, a 13-year-old is an adult. Well, I mean, that's crazy. But yet, that's what Mother Nature is saying. And it seems like, I mean, do you feel that a young adult should be educated and enlightened enough and prepared enough for this world to make adult decisions as even procreation at that age? Because it seems to me that that would be in congruence with nature itself.
Yes. In other words, that if biologically speaking, we're in a position to function as quote unquote adults, then intellectually speaking, we should be able to do the same.
Absolutely. Yeah.
No. Yeah. And I've thought about that, too. And it's absolutely true. So that is to say that when a young boy is in a position to where he can actually produce sperm and create life, then who's to say that by that time he should not have a level of intellectual aptitude to function as a man or even function as a father by that time? The same thing could be said about women and young girls. It's just that the issue really is the degrees of arrested development, and a lot of it comes out of the programming. In other words, if you can keep a person stuck in childhood, then therefore they will not, and I'm talking about intellectually speaking, their body may grow, but their intellectual aptitude may be stuck in the paradigm of childhood, then they will have a very difficult time operating intellectually speaking as an adult, even though physiologically or biologically they are in a position to operate as an adult. Very important point.
Yeah, I mean, it's when you were talking earlier about the, you know, the fact that it's like striving to always be the best, you know, like that's what manhood is really defined as. To me, it seems like if there is some sort of like great creator being, a god or whatever it was, you know, the quest of becoming the best we could be would be pretty damn good reason enough to put us here. You know, it's something that we can either choose to engage in or not, right? We can either choose that higher road or we cannot. And I feel like nature rewards people that do choose the higher roads. Have you felt those rewards since, you know, going on this path, if you will?
Yes. Well, I would say that I felt the rewards in terms of what I have seen in my own children's lives, yeah. And also what I've seen in my wife's experience. You know, and it's true that when you choose that, what you quote unquote higher road, that there is a shift that takes place. There's a shift that takes place in your own consciousness, but then also what takes place around you, there's a shift too, and people benefit from that. And I think that that's one of the reasons why, as men, it's important for us to really engage our life in a way where we recognize that every single day affords us with an opportunity to become something greater. And as we become greater, we're taking the higher road. We're seeking our higher self, and therefore there's a higher road to higher self. What ultimately begins to take place is that around us, the universe begins to morph based upon our higher self. And then all of those people who are around us begin to benefit from that too, not just my wife, my children, but everyone I have that I have interaction with. And I also have to say this, that I don't want men to think that when I say that you have to become greater, that doesn't mean in comparison to any other man. That just means that the idea is that you are becoming better than who you were yesterday.
That's such an excellent point.
Such a very important point, because oftentimes men, they take this notion that you have to become greater because it's a braggadocious, you know, it's a competition thing. No, you're not in competition with anyone except who you were yesterday. That's the only person that you're in competition with. Who you were yesterday is the only person that you are in competition with. So in that sense, I don't want men to think that somehow you have to, you know, you're trying to become greater in comparison or in relationship to someone else. No, this is what it means to be a man, that every single day you are trying to become the greatest man that you can be. And it's not about where other men are at. It is about where you are at day by day. Very important point.
Yeah. You know, becoming that greater man. One thing that I've always noticed is that, at least looking in my own life internally, whatever, that there's sort of two sides of the spectrum. There's a man within me and a woman within me. And it's, you know, the human beings are made of electromagnetic energy, right? And this polarity we can understand through, you know, male female, right? And the female is the, you know, if you will, the nurturing, caring, tender, you know, side, if you will. And to me, it seems like the true manhood would be merging both of these. I mean, do you sort of see this polarity? Because it seems like you work with your heart and you are that tender. You have that tenderness. You have that nurturing side to you. Just the question, I guess, would be is like, to me, it seems like that's what manhood is about. Do you feel that way?
Well, that's what it means to be. That's what humanity is really about.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. You know, and so what came to mind when you were saying that, and it was eloquently stated, was yin and yang. You know, there's the yin and there's the yang, but then within the yin, there's a seed of the yang, and
sure.
Vice versa.
Yeah,
that's the same thing that applies to the human species. And in other words, that, you know, being a man doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, all I have to do is to be like this great masculine being and that's it. No, there's a feminine aspect. And when I say this is what I mean by the complementary aspect of our existence, that we are everything. So in other words, that we have the masculine energy within us, we have the feminine energy within us. There may be more masculine energy present, there may be more feminine energy present, but whatever the case is, that as a pathway to total completion of the whole, that as a man, I can tap into the feminine qualities when they're needed. As a man, I can tap into the masculine qualities when they are needed. And so therefore, as a man, if it's necessary for me to be affectionate with my children, I can tap into that aspect of self. Okay, it's not anything outside of me, but I can tap into that aspect of self, and my children benefit from that. But conversely, when there are times where I have to maybe be a little bit more aggressive and more masculine, where I can tap into that side as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we're you know, going back to this sort of like media manipulation, the programming, things like that. It's like we are surrounded by basically role models on TV or whatever, with where the man is, you know, he's the beer swilling, you know, watching football, overweight, hand down his pants kind of thing. And it's and I see it's like, okay, if we don't have the father figure that to show us, you know, to present us the right path, then we search for it other places. And we get bombarded by this sort of stuff. What do you allow your children to see as far as TV, video games, internet, that sort of thing?
Yeah, we're very careful about that. And there are some people who would say that maybe we're overprotective. But again, what we're protecting is the consciousness of our children. And we want them to have a pure consciousness and hold on to that for as long as possible. In other words, that pure consciousness and how children tend to operate is really rooted in levels of genius. And we want to preserve the genius within our children, the creativity, the imagination. We want to preserve that. And a lot of us, it's not preserved because of trauma. And our, you know, if so much begins to shut down, you know, our imagination begins to shut down, our intellectual aptitude begins to shut down, our sense of spirituality begins to shut down, our creativity begins to shut down when we are traumatized. And so our job as parents, my wife and I, is to preserve their internal genius. And so therefore, we have to keep them safe and protected from the programming that would adversely affect their consciousness. So my wife, we're very clear. When it comes to movies, what we've been doing this for about a decade now, is we tend to screen the movie in advance. Now, if we don't have time to screen any particular movie, what we do is we watch it with our children. The first time that they see it, we watch it with them. If there's anything that's inappropriate, anything that we feel is derogatory, anything that we feel has sexual innuendo, there's a lot of that going on too, subliminal messages that deal with sex and that type of thing, we either decide not to proceed with that movie, or we sit there and we talk with our children. We explain why it's inappropriate. So in other words, we're stimulating their intellectual understandings as to what they are seeing. So in that sense, we're giving them the insight needed so they can do the analysis themselves later on, because they're going to be exposed to it at some point. And maybe not just in a movie, it can be on a television show, it could be over the internet, it could be in a song that they hear on the radio, but they will have or it can be in a book, in a magazine, they will have, or even in their interactions with other people, they will develop the intellectual ability to analyze and have a level of discernment as to what it is that they are being exposed to, and they can say yay or nay whether or not they're going to continue to engage. In other words, they can turn it off, they can leave that experience alone, leave that person alone, move on. My wife and I, we tend to screen things in the first place. We also, in that we speak to our children about these things, and so a lot of the media manipulation programming that I talk about in my documentaries and my videos and lectures, these are things that my children, they understand too, because we tend to have conversations about these things. So we're enabling them with the knowledge base needed for them to have a level of intellectual aptitude so they can make their own determinations as to what they are seeing. And this gets to the point that we brought up earlier, and that is that it took me, 32 years to get to that point. Here I have a 10-year-old who is already starting to get to that point. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I have a 9-year-old who's starting to get to that point, and a 7-year-old who is just about to get to that point. This is what I mean by we can do something totally different from the next generation, and they would be more empowered. And then what happens for the next generation to follow that one? And so getting back to the question, my wife and I, we're very careful with what we allow our children to see. We're very careful about what they're allowed to listen to. Very important thing, too. I went to college to study music, and I was a musician for most of my life. I understand the power of music. I understand the power of frequency and vibration, and how the frequency and vibration opens up the subconscious mind, and therefore the lyrical composition of that music or that musical genre will ultimately be embedded directly into the subconscious mind without critical thought, without conscious processing. And so therefore, music is a very important thing to look at, especially as it relates to protecting your children's consciousness. So as it relates to what we allow our children to listen to, my wife and I, in terms of music, we are extremely careful. disrespectful. There is so much out there in terms of music that is derogatory, demeaning, disrespectful, sexist, not only demeaning to women, but also demeaning to men, providing men with a very low vibrational archetype for what it means to be a man, what it means to be a father, what it means to be a husband. So we've been very careful about that with our children. So when it comes to what we expose them to or what we allow them to experience, we're basically filtering it out. As another example, one other one, video games. I spent a lot of time playing video games when I was a child.
Sure.
Now, not only did I spend a lot of time, I developed a nickname. They used to call me Lenintendo. Okay. So you know if your nickname becomes the video game system that you're used to playing on back in 1984 or whatever it was, you know that you have a serious reputation that's based upon the amount of time that you've spent. And I was really like this childhood a genius or savant when it came to video games because I was able to recognize the program. In other words, I could see the matrix within how those early video games would play. The matrix themselves and the artificial intelligence was so minimal that I could actually memorize it and then therefore I could beat games really easily. But only because I spent an exuberant amount of time playing video games. And a lot of those video games were extremely violent. Now, what my wife and I, what we've done with our sons is, not only did we not allow them to play video games early on, but now that, you know, now they're 10 and 9, we're very careful now about the video games that we allow them to play. One of the games that we allow them to play, it's a city planning game. So what they're learning commerce. They're learning how to zone residential zones, the difference between residential, commercial, and industry, you know, how to set up roads, you know, where to put the stoplights, you know, where to put the parks, you know, where should the jobs mainly be located in your city? It's called Sim City. And sure. And they are getting this wonderful, and how to budget all of this. You know, how much money are you going to put into the police department? How much money are you going to put into the medical establishment? All this kind of thing. And they're learning these important human skills in terms of how to build the city. That's totally different than me back in the day playing Mega Man where I'm just shooting things up. Another game that they love to play is called Space Engineers. And they have, it's basically engineering principles but set out in space. So you have to build and construct these mega structures and these spaceships and all these types of things. My sons, they truly enjoy that type of thing. But it's intellect-based and it's also highly educational. So whatever the case may be, if it's movies, television, video games, as parents, it's important that we take the time to just screen what it is that we're going to allow our children to participate in. And that will go a long way in terms of keeping their consciousness and preserving their internal genius. And this is precisely what has happened for our own children.
You know, I'm glad you're not so absolutist about this stuff, because there is a balance that can be, you know, that you can strike here between, you know, obviously some negative video game or negative movie, that sort of thing, that's really going to do some sort of, you know, it's kind of like psychological damage. I mean, I see the people that play first person shoot 'em up games, that sort of thing. I don't see where the good is in that. Not only is to me is maybe I'm sounding like a crotchety old man here or something, but I don't see, where's the what are they learning from this? What better could they be doing with their time, this sort of thing? But I like the fact that you're not absolutist about, hey, no video games or no TV or things like that, because there can be some beneficial, something beneficial from these things as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I didn't, my wife and I, we don't want to exclude our children from what's all out there in the world. You know, in other words, because you can't protect them from everything, but what you can do is that you can provide them with the intellectual foundation through which they can navigate those types of things that may not necessarily be beneficial to them, because they're going to get it at some point in their life anyway. So it's better, instead of trying to shelter them and put them in a box and hide them in a closet, instead what you do is you develop their intellectual processes so that when they are put in a position where they have to experience certain things, and preferably later on in life, okay, that they will have the intellectual base to be able to process that particular experience and make the appropriate decision. Here's another example, because this, again, as parents, we sometimes decide on things and we may even think it's the right thing then, but then later on we may think that it wasn't the best thing to do. And here's an example, because I don't want people to think that I'm a perfect parent at all. So one of the movies that and really franchises that I really enjoyed was Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching Star Wars when it was coming on HBO, and I may have been, I don't know, I might have been maybe 8 years old. Yeah, maybe 8 years old. I'm 30. Yeah, 39. Yeah, so I'm about to be 39. So I think I was about 8 years old. I might have been 10, somewhere around there. And I was intrigued by Star Wars, and I thought it was because of the spaceships. You know, I thought it was about the spaceships and the lightsabers because, you know, I just found that to be fascinating. But what I really realized later on when I became an adult was I was fascinated because fascinated by Star Wars because the premise of Star Wars was really about redemption. It was really telling the story of a father and son, meaning Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker. That's really what the premise of Star Wars is. It's not about war out in space. It's really about a war that was taking place between a father who wasn't a good father and his son. And then the father coming to a level, meaning Darth Vader, him coming to a point in his experience wherein he began to move back into the light. And as he moved back into the light, he was able to take that mask off and allow his son, Luke Skywalker,
realizing he was lying to himself all these years, right?
Absolutely. And allowing his son to see his true face. See, he always had that mask on because he was something that really he was not. But when he dies, he ultimately consoles with Luke, or really Luke consoles him, and they come to this level of understanding, and he takes the mask off. Here, my son, let me look upon you with my human eyes. You see, that's why I gravitated to Star Wars, because it was telling my life story up to that point in terms of my own father. You know, ultimately, Darth Vader was an abusive being. Well, my father was an abusive being. Okay, the same thing. Now, what happened for me was at a certain point when I got older and started having children, I wasn't so much interested in Star Wars, but then my sons, they got into Legos. They love Legos, okay, because these are the types of things that we provide our children with. And I remember playing with Legos, and it's very important that children play with things that are going to stimulate their mind. They can use their creativity and that kind of thing. Plus, they learn mathematics and all this type of thing, all types of things. So at a certain point, they found out that there were these Star Wars Legos, and they started asking these questions. What's Star Wars about? What's Star Wars about, Daddy? And I started telling them about, well, I want to see. You know what? It's too violent. I don't want you to see the movies because they're too violent. I may have been being overprotective. Maybe not. Maybe so, maybe not. Because by that time, what, they're 8 and 9, okay? By the age of 10, though, however, my son, he becomes 10, and then Lego Star Wars, they find out that there are these movies called Lego Star Wars. And so it's really like Star Wars, but it's more like for children. It's not as graphic. And really, some people would say, if they go back and look at the old Star Wars from the 70s, they would say, Lennon, that's not a big deal. I know, but I want to be safe with my children. And so I said, okay, well, we'll go ahead and watch these and let's see if it's okay. And we watched them, and we felt it was appropriate that they can handle that at the age of 10 and 9. Now, if they were 7 and 6, we might have had a little bit of a problem with that, but 10 and 9, intellectually speaking, they have the intellectual aptitude. We prepared them. They could process anything that was there, including the levels of simulated violence, if you will, that is present in those particular cartoons. And not too much, but there is some there. Now, what happened was because they saw Star Wars, the kiddie version, if you will, with the Legos, now they were more adamant about seeing the actual movies. Now, what was I going to do as a father? Because I'm faced with this struggle now. Okay, do I expose my children to this programming that's present in Star Wars, and some of it is violent? Or do I simply put them, you know, kind of like keep them shielded from that and kind of just keep pushing them away? And what I decided was, no, I'm going to show it to them, but I'm going to sit there and I'm going to watch it with them. And as I watch it with them, I'm going to explain things as it goes along so that they won't get caught up in the war out in space, but they see the deeper story about father and son. See, now they get to learn a lesson here. See, that's why we got to be careful as parents. It's not about shielding our children from everything. No, use it as a teaching tool. Intellectually speaking, we're going to talk about this, son. Now, also, do you see the relationship between the father and son? You see how it becomes difficult, and you see how Darth Vader, he wasn't a good father. You don't want to be that way. You want to be a good father. You want to take care of Padme, right? You want to take care of you want to take care of your son. You want to take care of your son and daughter, Leia. You right? Okay, yeah. Now here's the thing. As we begin to watch the series, my son start to pick up on things that I didn't pick up when I used to watch the series. And one of the things that they picked up on was the dynamic of the Sith and the Jedi. The Jedi being, you know, these, you know, at least within the series, they're supposed to be these people who kind of operate within the light, and they're always trying to do the right thing. At least they try to. And they look upon their experience as an opportunity to be in service to that which is good. But the Sith, on the other hand, they tend to have this very negative disposition, and they look upon their life as an opportunity to do bad. My sons picked up on that at the age of 10 and 9. And so in their mind, they can see a clear distinction in terms of a path, the appropriate path to manhood, where they recognize that I can either go to the light side or I can go to the dark side. So in other words, because we've prepared them intellectually, now they can engage a media artifact with a little critical thinking, and they can see a story beyond the story and behind the story that they can find value in, and they can actually motivate them in terms of their progressions into manhood. To this day, if you bring up to my sons, if you sat down and you brought up Anakin Skywalker, who later becomes Darth Vader, and his relationship to Padme, and how ultimately he kills her. And then, but prior to her dying, she gives birth to his children. If you bring that up, my sons will have many things to say. Eloquent perspective in terms of the difference between being a true committed husband and father and a protector of women versus being someone like Anakin Skywalker, who ultimately becomes Darth Vader. And ultimately what they're saying is there's a difference between you, Daddy, meaning me, someone who is a committed husband and father, and my own father, Darth Vader, my father, Lennon Honor Jr. My sons can make those clear distinctions, but only because we prepared them intellectually to process particular media artifacts that if we did not prepare them for and we allowed them to be exposed to, would have probably had some level of psychological damage upon them. Very important point.
Yeah. You're so completely open with like your family life and your emotions and your history and all this stuff. I mean, your daily going on, so you're, you know, at your site and things like that. I mean, do you ever feel vulnerable, you know, in being so completely transparent with so many different people?
You know, we've been taken advantage of, my wife and I, over the years. But, you know, one of the things my teacher told me, my music teacher, was that he always appreciated the fact that I was always open and that I was always put myself in a position where I was vulnerable. And what that means is that I'm always completely honest. I'm always completely candid, and I share things with people. And I don't do it because I want people simply to know my story. I do it because I want to connect to people who can relate to my story so that they can have the inspiration to know and the motivation to know that they too can transcend their childhood paradigm. So in that sense, I think that it's worthwhile. I think that it's an important, and that's why I think my wife and I, she's the same way. We bring value to the world in a sense, to as many people as we can, at least. We bring a certain value and so that people can recognize that ultimately they can overcome whatever the challenge may be in their life. They can overcome if they were brutalized as children. If their father wasn't there for them, that doesn't mean that they can't be there for their own children. And that doesn't mean that they can't have a man who's going to be there, you know, in their children's life. You know, if their mother was abusive, it doesn't mean that you have to be abusive to your own children. You know, if you were sexually molested, then it doesn't mean that your children are going to actually be sexually molested, that you can actually do something different to keep your children safe, or that if you were circumcised, that somehow your sons have to be circumcised too. Or here's one important example. Just because your mother and father did not have a positive relationship, it does not mean that you can't have one. And, you know, most people believe that. They believe that they cannot be in a positive relationship, even if it's on a subconscious level, because what they saw in their parents was dysfunctionality. Well, my wife and I, by being open, by being candid, and sharing our life journey, what we're hoping to do is to provide people with the truth that anyone can establish a positive relationship and live a happy life if they so choose, and they do the work, they heal themselves, and they prepare themselves for these things. And that's why it's important for my wife and I to be candid with people. And yes, this puts us in a vulnerable position, but if that's what it takes, then that's what it takes.
That's a great answer. I've noticed in my own life when I teach things, it helps remind me in my own life, you know, whatever it is, whether it's teaching a spiritual lesson or a philosophical lesson or whatever it is, it's like I do that and it reminds me. Do you get that by teaching your children of this? It like helps you on a day-to-day basis remind, hey, I've got to do this in my own life.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I have a saying that I teach because I learn. Yeah. And I learn so that I can teach. And I will tell you that my life lessons really began with the birth of my children. You know, it just puts everything into a whole different perspective, because now we're reaching into future generations and the impact will be quite profound. You know, I can only imagine what my grandchildren or great-grandchildren or great-great-grandchildren will experience because of the decisions that my wife and I have made. Yes, I have learned more over the last decade from being a father and having my wife and I having certain experiences, having certain struggles and keeping our family, vibrant and moving forward. And then all of the doubt that people give and all the negativity that people, you're going to homeschool. You don't vaccinate your children. You're eating vegan. You don't eat meat. You don't drink sodas. You don't, you know, you're going to home birth. Are you crazy? We've had people say things like, you know, your child is going to die. We've had so much negativity and toxicity from the external world. So my wife and I, we've been through the challenges. We've been through the challenges. But the thing is that everything that we did and everything that we are doing, we do it because we know that it is in the best interest of our children. And see, here's the thing, that as we do these things for our children, that we know that are in the best interest of our children, there are certain specific lessons that can only be learned because we are doing the best that we can for our children. And these lessons will not be learned by those who are not doing the best that they can for their children. So my life lessons, the value that I bring to the world, is not because, you know, I went to college or because I did wonderful in high school. It's you know, that's not it, or because I studied well. No, it's because I recognize, and it came out of, as we began our discussion here today, it came out of my need and my desire to keep my children's consciousness safe. And so in recognizing that need, there is a whole level of growth and maturation that I had to engage in over the last decade that has put me in the position where I am here today. And see, in other words, I became a student. I became someone who learned the lessons over the last decade, lessons that I could not have learned prior to having children, lessons that maybe I could have learned if my father was a good father and took me by the hand and guided me through the process. But because he was not there, what did I do? I had to learn them myself. And that's precisely one other thing. That's precisely why I decided to write the book. I wanted to write some things in my early, and I wrote that, I think, when I was 20. I started when I was 27, 28, and it was at a time where I didn't know anything about fatherhood. I really didn't. My first son was just about to be born, and I was just trying to find some answers that my father could have probably taught me, but because he was not there in my life, because he did not prepare me for men, he did not prepare me for fatherhood, I had to learn myself. And as I was learning those lessons myself, I started to write those lessons down. Now, here we are a decade later, and I have 10 years, basically 10 years more of learning my lessons, and now I'm in a very empowered position as a man, as a father, and as a husband. This would not have taken place if I had not recognized the importance of me raising my children properly and learning the lessons that come out of raising them properly. And this is precisely what our message is for other people and other parents, that regardless of what you may have experienced in life, that you can do something better for your children, and you will be blessed not only with a happy household, but then also these life lessons that are so profound that you can share with the world and will benefit other people as well.
And undertaking that path takes courage. That's the one thing that I don't think people really realize. It's like, you know, in order to do that, that takes a lot of courage a lot of times, because a lot of things that you're doing is against the status quo. It's going against the tide of, you know, collected thought, if you will, right? I'm not going to vaccinate my children. I am going to homeschool my children. I am going to home birth my, you know, that sort of thing. That's courageous.
Yes. You have to have courage in a world today wherein fear is the main tool of control. I wrote right inside my other book that the greatest means of control is not actualized through military might, physical subjugation, or brute force. The greatest means of control is actualized through the manipulation of the psychological condition of the human species. And the manipulation of the psychological condition of the human species is mainly derived out of stimulating levels of fear. And so therefore, if we are to change things for the better, we have to have a level of courage. One of the things that took place in my life was when my wife decided that she wanted to home birth, I was fearful, and I rejected. I said, no, we can't do that. That's, you know, no, there's no way. She went to home birth. But then at a certain point, I began to think, and I said, why did I respond that way? And the reason why was because I had levels of fear. But the fear came out of ignorance. I didn't know what home birthing was all about. I didn't know how to deliver a baby. You know, I didn't know what that all entailed. And the levels of responsibility that goes along with that was profound to me at that point in my life. But what did my wife and I do? Because ultimately, I said to myself, I can't deny her of what it is that she wants to experience in her birthing experience, because that's not my job. My job is to support her as a woman when she's pregnant. So we decided to, okay, well, then let's go ahead. What we're going to do is we're going to prepare for this. And we started studying. My wife and I, we looked for any information about pregnancy, any information about the three stages of labor, any information that we can find about the dilation of the cervix. I mean, we went on and on and on and on and on. And we did this for 3-4 months. And at a certain point, because I developed a knowledge base, I became comfortable and the fear dissipated. And now I had courage. Now, because you have to have courage to do something like that, especially if it's not the status quo. And yet we went through this process. And see, now when we're giving birth to our third child, we do it at home. as a man, I had to have a level of courage that I had never summoned ever in my life. And I have had to be courageous throughout my life because of my childhood experience, but nothing like this, that I'm going to birth my own child into the world. It's just me and my wife and our other two children at the time are there. And I have to be the one who's going to be responsible for the health of my wife. I'm going to be the one who's responsible for the birthing, for the labor process, first stage, second and third place stage. I'm going to be responsible for delivering the baby and delivering the placenta afterwards. I'm going to have to be responsible for the caretaker and the uptake, the care of my wife postpartum. And I'm going to have to be responsible. Well, I had to have a level of courage. There's no way, because if I'm trying to deliver my own baby and the levels of fear are consuming me, how am I going to be able to support my wife properly? So the most profound experience that I've ever had, the most empowering experience that I've ever had as a man, was the experience of delivering my own child. You have to come into a level of courage, especially when we live in a culture of perpetual fear. I have to say it again. You have to come into a level of courage, especially while we're living in a culture of perpetual fear, and not just in terms of if you decide to home birth, it's not for everyone, or if you decide to homeschool, it's not for everyone, or if you decide not to vaccinate. It should be for everyone, but if you want to do something different, that's okay. What I'm saying is that the power of courage in any area of your life, what it does is it empowers you to create a life experience that is greater than what the socialized norm can ever present to you. Because now you're stepping up to the world stage and you're saying, I am creating my own destiny, in essence. I am creating my own reality. I am the master of my own reality. That's a very empowered place to be, but it can only be achieved through courage. And so part of being a man, I would say, is to have courage, but you also have to have the courage enough to admit that you have some work to do too. And so though I can speak on these things with a level of fervor and vigor, and you can tell there's a level of passion there, I still recognize that regardless of what I've accomplished up to this point and everything that I've done in my life, I still recognize that I got work to do. That's what it means to be a man. That's what it means to have courage.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is exactly what it means to be a man. That's great. This has been awesome, man. Truly awesome. I love speaking with you. You just fire away, and I love your perspective on so many things. So it would be an honor to have you back, and maybe we could talk, you know, about the psychological manipulation of 9/11 next time, because I know I just got that book and I love your perspective on that. So, I mean, if you would, that would be awesome to have you back. So.
Absolutely. Marty, look, I really enjoyed speaking with you here. I enjoyed talking with you for the short time when we had the table next together, or next to each other at the Free Your Mind conference. And I really enjoyed speaking with you here. So anytime, brother. I also have to say, I've done a lot of radio interviews. You do a fantastic job. Keep up the good work, brother.
Oh, thank you very much. So, hey, do you want to tell people, I do a little bio before the show, just so you know, but do you want to tell people how they can get a hold of you and purchase your products and all of that?
Yeah, sure. So I have a website, linenhonor.com. I have my books listed there. We also have premium membership. We upload new videos on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. They're on linenhonor.com. We also have videos there. Podcasts. We have all kinds of stuff there. And also, if you just want to just kind of start to get into my work and you want to look into some of my YouTube productions, you can do that as well. I have a YouTube page, Linen Honor, or Linen Honor Films, but you can just type in Linen Honor on YouTube. And I would recommend that people check out some of those videos. I mean, I do different topics. I do topics like what we've spoken about here. I also do topics on media manipulation, mind control, subliminal messages. I have a whole series, The Truth About Subliminal Messages, How to Protect Your Subconscious Mind. Some of that's on YouTube. Some of that's available on the website for premium members, and I think that's like a 9-hour documentary series where I analyze different subliminal messages, and I give the psychological background wherein people can understand on a psychological level how subliminal messages work, but then ultimately how to protect your subconscious mind. A lot of content on for premium members on linenhonor.com. So I want to encourage people, head on over to linenhonor.com. We have premium membership there. We also have videos there, podcasts. We have our books listed there. And then if not that, then head on over to YouTube. We have plenty of stuff there on YouTube, and I'm also on Facebook under Linen Honor.
Awesome, man. So thanks once again for joining me. Keep on keeping on, and yeah, let's chat again soon.
Yeah, I look forward to it, Marty. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Again, I really enjoy speaking with you. You do a fantastic job. Keep up the good work, brother. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, man. Cheers.
Peace.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Our outro song is provided by the hip-hop project called The Space Between and is entitled The Shaman's Cave, and this song features artist Weya on this track. This cut is off the CD, The New Vision Project, that was just released here in the past month or so, and it's a seriously solid CD. It's well produced, it's got really uplifting positive lyrics, and just great grooves. You can download the entire record for free, as well as several other records by this artist collective at www.vendettakings.com, and Kings is spelled K-I-N-G-Z. Coming up on the next episode of the Marty Leeds Math Magical Radio Hour will be author of The Undying Stars, David Matheson. I'm reading this book right now and I'm just eating it up, so I'm really looking forward to this next show. We're going to be speaking about astrotheology, astrology, philosophy, and so much more. Be sure to stay tuned and always remember, an opinion without pie is just an onion. Thanks.
If I'm thirsty, I'm sipping ashwagandha. Living day to day off the land, I'm handling my mrakaba. And the key for the vehicle's ayahuasca. Saw visions and ritualistic ways for the mantra. In a shaman's cave, it's native how you stay with a father. It's like a guided presentation through the nature of karma. Able and willing, I went to this place, this bone chilling. Saw an amazing array of a garden of old feelings. And a raised air filled with informational statements. So I gazed there and contemplated ways of the ancients. And how you brought it back to the basics in a couple of ages. Subconscious is full of those provocative pages above artists. I'm swarmed in a maze full of prophets. I feel the light try to anchor me back, but I go on with it. I'm walking through a parallel world, but I can't wander it. I can't even explain this place, you couldn't ponder it. The feeling's like a presence alive with no form to it. These ornamental energy forces, they go to war with it. Unfortunate, I'm back in my body now that I'm born again. A canopy of trees for the rain somewhere in Oregon. I started out in AZ, Sedona, that's the origin. They split the time cycles in half, I transported it. And over there's the medicine man with a few coordinates. I need another cocktail, I'm feeling insubordinate. They told me that's a spiritual crime, but I've been ignoring it. I'm feeling like it's miracle time for me to explore again. Imperial, the way that I travel without DeLorean, it's lyrical. I'm switching my resonance to Victorian. My frequency, it made up my soul and so I'm victorious. I'm frequently in search of a hole as big as the story gets. And recently, I'm losing control, but I can't afford this. I gave into astonishment and woke before we first met.
Let me show you where it's at.
Searching for that perfect place. Will I find it? New vision, man, it might just be inside me. Peru to Panama, cross the Amazon remote. Relocate, turn them cameras on. Documentary called my whole life. These trees got years on me. What did you grow like? Dreamt the Gaia, seen the goddess of gardens. Multiple harvests with flowers all blossom retarded. What is possible potentially now is uncharted. Open nature, circling back to where I started. Looking for the shaman's cave, will I find it? Walking with my crystals and my stars are in alignment. Native patterns threaded my ensemble. Let them know what we rep and protect them from Monsanto. Congo connected, there's energy in the jungle. Destiny every step forever beyond the humble. Interrelated vines intertwined families through canyons, vistas, mountains along canopies. Kundalini where my home is. Climbing to a shrine, take heed to every omen.
It is your choice to explore. You decide, but your energy turns. Be it a false side or the conspicuous title. A man who only exists in 2D, two-dimensional land. We are so quick to believe in what we cannot touch or see. Hey, twin, it is right in front of me. It's invisible. Life.
find it.
You've been listening to the Marty Leeds Mathemagical Radio Hour. More information about the work of Marty Leeds can be found at MartyLeeds33.com. You can download his full-length studio record, Opus Medico Musica, from iTunes or Amazon.com. And be sure and check out his books, Pi and the English Alphabet, Volume 1 and 2, and The Peacock's Tales, available at MartyLeeds33.com and Amazon. For hours of free video, check out his YouTube channel at MartyLeeds33. More information about SyncBook Press, SyncBook Radio, or SyncBook Events can be found at thesyncbook.com. If you like this podcast, please support it by becoming a donor. You'll find the donation links under each episode on the website and consider setting up a monthly charge. Thanks so much, and though some people think it's a piece of cake, we all know it's easy as pie.